My favorite safer is Missy Elastic Charm.
Okay. I've learned that before.
Excellent. So now you'll learn it all new because it's with me.
Yeah.
But everybody knows his Hakdama. His Hakdama is, I'm not telling you anything new, which is very interesting. Because what do you need to say for, safer for, if there's nothing new? So there are definitely things that are new in terms of chidushim. There are definitely chidushim that are here. But his point is that the benefit that anyone gets from this type of sefer is not from learning the chidushim. In fact, it's almost like useless in a certain sense, because the Mesilas Yesharim is so unique because it's a guideline to growth in Avodas Hashem. And I'm going to tell you something. I don't know if most people know this. Most people would refer to Mesilas Yesharim as a sefer of Musar, right? You agree with that? It's a Musar
sefer? I hear that.
What is a Musar sefer? What does Musar even mean? So I think most people think Musar is whatever is not Hasidus is Musar. there's like the Litvax, and then there's the Hasidim. And the Hasidim get Hasidus, and the Litvax just have Musar.
I think Musar is like something that like people like just want to get like a little inspiration.
So it's interesting that you should say that, because I think that our generation, that's what everybody's looking for, is inspiration. And Musar is really not inspiration. And Musar actually probably comes from the Shoresh of Yisurin. Did you know that? I had Max and Masha over for Friday night a couple of weeks ago. Max and Masha are from the Ukraine. In general, in the most general stereotypical sense, we'll call them Russians. And I remember I had a boy in my shir when I was teaching in JSS, and I talked about Musar, and he couldn't figure out why I was discussing garbage. Did you know that in Russian, the word Musar means garbage?
Garbage, yeah. I heard that before.
Yeah. So,
but I've heard a lot of stories, like people saying, like in Fairlawn, in the shul there, they have a lot of Russian immigrants or Ukrainians. So I remember Yudin telling me that he tried talking about Musar.
Yeah.
He said, someone asked him afterwards, like, why are you talking about garbage?
Yeah, so I had that same experience. So Musar probably comes to the Sharish of Yisurin, which means to suffer. And here's what you should know. That whether a person is learning Hasidus, whether a person is learning other sources of information, it doesn't really make a difference where the sources of information is or come from. The idea of information is that information is here. Information goes into the brain. It's processed intellectually. And anything that goes into the brain, we would hope, gets translated into changing behaviors. But it's just not true. It's just not true. It doesn't work like that. Just because a person has a piece of information, it doesn't mean that it's going to make a difference in their life at all. Mm-hmm. So that's really what Musar means. Musar means anything which you can utilize to take from here and put it here. Musar means to do those types of things that takes something from being simply an intellectual idea and making a change the way that we behave in the world. That's really what Musar means. So it's causing ourselves suffering. What do you mean causing yourself suffering? Because it would be much easier to just live life and not do anything, but then we don't change. So the process of change involves forcing ourselves to do things differently, which always involves being uncomfortable, leaving comfort zone. Leaving comfort zone. So in that sense, I don't know that there are any Sifrei Musar. You know what I mean by that?
But there's a lot of books that, like, example, like I'm working in this farm sale, and a lot of the books are English Musar. So they're not attached to there. So they just lie.
Yeah, so that's what I'm trying to get at, is that a real Sefer of Musar is...
Well, I should go in there. You're saying I should go in there and say, oh, my Rav told me that all these books are fake. Don't listen to them.
What I'm saying is
that, but then, if you don't want me to have any job at the firm, so then I guess I could do that too. That works.
Well, I'll throw you out. But what I'm trying to say is that any book that presents itself as a safer Musar is just giving you information. You know what I mean?
So why do we call it Musser and not just...
Because Musser really is in our hands to do. It's a sefer that gives us sometimes the tools or information. There are two levels, right? And level number one is information. Level number two is tools. So, for example, let's say that a person really wants to change one of his behaviors. So he's going to go to a therapist, right? He's going to go to a therapist and he's going to say, I have an anger management problem. I have a problem with anxiety. I have a problem with whatever it is. There's some mida that he has that he feels is negatively impacting his behaviors in the world. So he wants to change his behaviors. So the therapist is going to say to him, okay, here's how you need to change your perspective, but that's not good enough because here's what you need to do in order to change those behaviors. In other words, there's two things. There's information, there's perspective, which is cognitive, and then there's the application of tools to change what you want to change. So let's give a mashal. Let's say that you want to build a building. So you need blueprints, and that gives you the idea of what you're going to do. So what's your favorite Lego playset?
The one that I've had or one that I wish I've had?
I don't care. Whatever you want.
So we're talking about the ones that I've had. It's probably the airplane ones, but the ones that I wish I had were probably the Death Star.
Oh, so let's say, you know, you get the Death Star Lego set.
The hot thing. I don't know if it's still a hot thing anymore, but back in the time...
The Millennium Falcon has like thousands of pieces or something. I don't know.
Well, but Rob, nobody really wants to be the good guy. No one wants to be the bad guy.
So we should speak about this after Shira, okay?
with all the Darth Vader, like all that stuff, I don't think anyone would want to be Luke, honestly. Like,
sorry. Like I said, maybe we should talk after share. So,
we'll have a poll tomorrow.
What?
We'll have a poll tomorrow about
this. A poll? That's a good idea. That's a good poll. A good poll to do on Zoom too, yeah. Anyway,
that's the point.
You know, when you want to know what you're building, you're gonna go ahead and you're gonna take a look at the picture because you want to know what you're gonna end up with.
Right.
And that helps you to build it because you know where you're headed. Now, with Legos, it's pretty easy because you know that what you're going to do is you're just going to use your hands to put the pieces together. So you don't really need a lot of tools in order to build what you're trying to build. That's not the case by more complicated things or other types of things. So if you're going to go ahead and build something out of wood, you're going to build something out of other materials, you're going to need tools in order to build it. So, you know, you receive your order from Amazon, you're going to build a bookcase, you're going to build whatever it is. And you're going to want that picture, just like by your Lego set, of the Death Star. And you're going to know where is this going so that you have an idea about how to build it. But that's not good enough because you still need to build it. Just because you have a dream and a vision about what you're going to have doesn't give it to you. Sounds obvious, but people don't do this in the world. People in the world, they'll say, you know, I want to be this. I want to get to this. I want to have this. And so they'll develop a picture about what it is that they want. I want to be the type of person that behaves in this way. And sometimes people think that that's good enough, that I'll sort of get there. I'm going to use a dirty word, organically. Yeah, it's like a dirty word because it means that you're not really utilizing any tools to get there. You're hoping it's going to happen on its own. That's what organically means.
Which, yeah.
Most things don't happen organically. Right?
Yeah.
So you have an idea about how you want to change and who you want to be. It's not good enough. So you need the tools to build it. And once you have the tools, you need to use them. So people who have actually worked with a therapist in one way or another, they know that the therapist is not, the genius of a good therapist is not that they give you an idea about where you want to go. The genius of a real good therapist is that they're able to give you tools that work to get you there.
Right.
So I'll give you a silly example. I remember one time somebody was asking a therapist about advice because she has trouble, let's say, putting the kids to bed. So you want to put the kids to bed. Now here's the problem. The kids don't want to go to bed, right? Kids will do anything not to go to bed. By the way, some of us are like that too, right? Anything so we don't have to go to bed. But
oh no, kids, going to bed is not the problem. It's more like just waking up at normal time on Sundays.
Really? You can go to bed like no problem?
At normal time on Sunday, like, I mean, watch a little TV, I'll fall asleep, but like.
Listen, a lot of people have trouble, you know, getting into bed. They want to do other things. They want to watch this. They want to do that. They want to read this, that, whatever. It's
34, usually in bed by then.
Anyway, but, okay, so let's say you're putting the kids to bed. And here's the problem. The problem is the kids don't want to go to bed. So they're giving you difficulty. They're making it difficult. It's taking a lot longer than you want it to. So right. Who cares? What's the big deal? So this person said that she was getting a lot of anxiety. She starts screaming at the kids. She starts getting upset because it's not just that she wants the kids to go to bed. It's just that the longer it takes to get the kids to go to bed, so the longer it's going to take to get the other things that she needs to do. She has a million other things. She needs to do laundry. She needs to clean the house. She needs to cook this and cook that and do this and do that and people to talk to. Like there's a million things on the agenda. And as long as this goes longer and longer and it's out of her control, so she's getting anxiety. So there's anxiety in putting the kids to bed. So the therapist said to her, you know, it's taking you longer to get the kids to bed because of this, right? The anxiety is preventing you from actually putting the kids to bed in a calm way that's going to make it more effective. So your anxiety is very much a negative part of putting the kids to bed. You got to get rid of it. How do I get rid of it? Well, what are you worried about? What's creating the anxiety? All the things I need to do. So stop thinking about all the things you need to do, right? If you wouldn't think about all the things you need to do and you could focus on the moment, then you wouldn't have the anxiety. But that's the problem. The problem is anxiety is something that you can't stop because it's in your mind. You can't just take something out of your mind. It doesn't work that way. Okay. So now we know where we want to head. We want to be at a place where we're not thinking about the future because we don't want to have the anxiety. But I need a tool. I need a tool to be able to get there. Give me a tool. So the therapist says you have to focus on the now. How do I remind myself? I'm in the now. I'm not later. So take your fingers and touch the bed. Have a keychain. Have something to remind you. I am here. I am not there. I am here and now. Something to remind you to focus on the here and now. So that's an example, maybe a stupid one, but that's an example of a tool to help us to get where we need to be. So in terms of Sifrei Musar, let's go back to where we were. Sifrei Musar will do two things for us. Number one, they're going to give us the idea about where we want to head, why we want to be there, motivate us to want to be there. But all of that is in the realm of where we want to get and where we want to be and who we want to be. But the most important part and the trickiest part of a Sefer of Musar is the tools. Hear what I'm saying? What are we going to utilize to get ourselves there? And like I said, organic is a dirty word because it doesn't happen organically. It doesn't work like that. Who says maybe it does? So this is what you were telling me this morning, that it's hard to get out of bed. You know why it's hard to get out of bed? Because we're dirt. Because we're called Adam. Adam comes from the word Adama. And many point this out, including, I believe, the Mesilas Yesharim later on, that we have part of us that doesn't want to move. So we have to get ourselves moving. In fact, I'll tell you something in the unbelievable. This is almost the opposite of the same point. It's unbelievable. The Vilna Gaon, in his comments to Megillas Rus. So if you remember the story, so Nomi is in the land of Moab, with Rus and Orpah, her two daughters-in-law, they're all that's left from the family. Husband died, the sons died, all that's left to Rus and Orpah. So Naomi says it's finally time to go back to Eretz Yisrael. Rus and Orpah said, we're coming with you. And she says, oh, come on, you don't want to do that. Orpah says, you're right. And then Rus, Davkaba, Rus clings her, sticks with her. And there's a whole conversation that ensues where Naomi tries to insist to Rus that she doesn't really want to come and it's going to be a very difficult life for her. And she's not going to be accepted. She's a Moabiyah after all. And it's a terrible idea. She's not going to be able to get married. She's going to live a lonely, lonely life. So the pasuk says that Naomi saw a teire, she saw, ki mis ametzes lavo, like amitz koach, aleph mem tzadi, ki mis ametzes lavo. So the Mefarshim are trying to translate this word, right? Tongues, right? We always have to start with our translations. So what does it mean that Naomi saw that Ruth was mis ametzes? So amitz koach usually means powerful, persistent, strong. But the Vilna Gaon says that's not what it means here. And by the way, that's how Chazal basically learn it. Because Chazal say, from here we learn that you're supposed to discourage a person, a non-Jewish person, from converting. This is like the model for it. So until we see that the Imam is persistent and insistent, we say, come on, what do you never heard of the Holocaust? Do you want to be part of the state? What are you, crazy? Come on, go home. It's easier for you to do something else. But if we see they're persistent, but Terry can miss Ametzes, so we say, okay, fine, come. The Gaon translates it differently. And the Vilna Gaon says that it means, la'ameitz means to struggle. To struggle. So he translates the pasuk, believe it or not, as that when Naomi saw that Ruth was struggling, so then she stopped pushing back and she said, okay, come. What's the idea of the Vilna Gaon? So the Gaon says, a lot of times, let me say it a little differently. In Hashkivenu in Davening, we say, V'haser Satan, what's the next word? V'haser Satan mil milfanenu. Milfanenu. Milfanenu is in front of us, and me'acharenu is behind us. So let's understand this. Why would we say that? Why do we want to remove the Satan from in front of us and behind us? The Satan in front of us, we understand, right? There's a Satan that's there to prevent us from going where we want to go. That's his name, the Satan. He prevents, right? Isn't that what it means? The Satan lo, to prevent him from going where he wanted to go. It says by Bilam, to prevent him from going where he wanted to go. What's the Satan me'achareinu? Says the Vilna Gaon, that there's a Satan behind us. You know what he's doing behind us? You don't see him. You know what he's doing? He's pushing you. He's pushing you to go ahead. Because you know what happens if you're walking at whatever pace you're walking and someone pushes you from behind, what do? You fall on your face. Right?
You push them right back.
You turn around and push them right back, you know? But you fall on your face. Sometimes the methodology of the Satan is that he pushes us up from behind. Go, 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 do it, do it, do it. Like what? Like what? You know, yeah, you know, go there, you'll make aliyah, you'll fail, and you'll come home a loser. Go ahead, study, learn all night, stay up all night learning, because in the morning you won't get up for shachris. Go ahead, do something good. Sometimes the Satan will actually push us to do something that we define as good, because he knows we'll fall on our face. And when we fall on our face, then we'll feel like a loser, and then he'll have us right where he wants us. We'll have yeush. Says the Vilna Gaon that Naomi was presented with Rus. Rus says, I want to come with you. And Naomi says, a bad idea. And Rus says, no, I want to do it, I'm coming with him, I'm coming. And Naomi says, with that type of attitude, she's for sure going to fail. Because what's going to happen is she's all rooted in the Yetzer Hara behind her. And she's going to come to Eretz Yisrael, and she's going to realize how difficult it is. And she's going to say, what was I thinking? Judaism stinks. You know, imagine a Baal Tshuva, and the Satan is pushing him until he totally fails. And then he can't have anything he wants anymore. And he took it on too fast. And now he resents Yiddishkeit. He resents it. I was reading a book one time about Kiruv and Tshuva methodologies. And I think Lisa Aiken was one of the authors. And over there she writes that there was a couple, they were becoming from together, husband and wife, and they used to go out dancing, I don't know, Thursday nights or something. And then as they got firmer, they're like, dancing doesn't really seem like the right thing to do. So he said, it's okay, we're not going to go out dancing anymore. But the problem is that if you just stop something like that cold turkey without replacing it with something else, so what does the person experience? Resentment. Meaning, even though the person knows it's the right thing to do, but because they're stopping something they enjoy and that they love out of a commitment to Judaism, it's a sacrifice. And a sacrifice where it's not supplanted or replaced with something else, so it creates resentment. I can't, you know, I miss it. And there's nothing that makes me feel better. So she says, yeah, you have to find something to replace it. So instead of dancing, we're going to do this, that we're going to get a geschmack out of. You hear?
Yeah.
So when Naomi saw that Ruth was struggling, and she had an awareness and an understanding that she's not, it's not just a satan pushing her from behind, go, 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 go. She said, okay, there are going to be challenges. And she was honest with herself about it and realized that it's going to be a challenge. So Naomi said, okay, now I realize, no, I see it's not the satan. Now let's go. Now you can do this. They tell a story that when Chaim Volozhiner wanted to start his yeshiva, that he came to the Vilna Gaon for a bracha, and he presented, you know, his plan for this magnificent yeshiva. And they say the Vilna Gaon just stood there quietly and didn't respond. So he left. And he came back sometime later, and again, he presented his idea for the yeshiva. And this time, the Vilna Gaon told him, you know, bracha v'atzlacha. So he asked, Rebbe, Yelamdeinu Rabbeinu, why the first time did you not say bracha v'atzlacha, and this time you did? So the Gaon answered him, because the first time you came in, I saw such an energy, such a fire, that you wanted to do this. You were so gung-ho, as we would call it, about this project, that I was choshesh, I was concerned maybe it was the satan behind you. But now that I see it's been time, and you still have that energy, and you still want to do it so much, so it can't be that it's the Yetzirah, because you've stuck with it. So bracha v'atzlacha. So that's the same idea, that to get ourselves moving, if you see that the dirt that we are, the adama within us, is moving, is ready to go, is raring to go, says the Gaon, be very careful. It might be the Yetzer Hara behind you. But if you find that it's hard, that it's a struggle, then that's where both your Yetzer Tov and your Yetzer Hara are fighting. That's where you want to be. Yeah? It's a very beautiful word, a very powerful word. And if you find yourself something that's very, very easy, there are two possibilities. It's either easy because you don't have a Yetzer Hara, because you've beaten this and it's not a challenge anymore, or because the Satan's pushing you to do it. So you have to know what are the things that's conquered territory that you don't have to, it's not a struggle for you anymore, versus things that should be a struggle. And it's really the Satan pushing you to do something that really is a bad idea. So that's the idea of things are not organic. Organic things are dangerous, because organic means that it's happening on its own. It doesn't. Why should it be happening on its own? The Yetzer Hara is behind it. The Yetzer Hara is behind it. That's why it's happening on its own. So nothing's going to, and then you're going to fall on your face. And the Yetzer Hara is going to turn around and say, you see, you're a loser. You can't do anything. You failed. This happens all the time. Yom Kippur, someone will take like a Kabbalah upon themselves. They'll accept upon themselves something that's absolutely absurd. They're not going to be able to do it. But they do it, and I'm going to do it. And then they fail. And then they resent that they ever did it. And then they end up upset. I told a story last night at Avos Uvanim. Little Yitzi. What is it? Yitzi, like Rabinowitz or something. Lived in Yerushalayim. Little Yitzi, one Shabbos, came to shul. Had his Suda. And after Suda, you know, he went to go to his friend's house or whatever it is. So he's walking through the streets. And he sees in the street the carriage of one of the ministers or something like that going through the streets. And flying out of this carriage comes a gold coin.
Sure.
And it lands on the street. And he sees it glistening in the light. And he runs over to it and he says, a gold coin. And he reminds himself, it's Shabbos. So he takes his foot, steps on the coin. And he says, I'm staying here until the end of Shabbos. I want to. So he's a good Jew. He's a good Jew, little Yitzi. So that's what he did. So he was there for hours, until some little Arab boys see him standing awkwardly in the street, and of course they say, "Hey, Jew, you know what are you doing? You know, nothing." Oh yeah, and they come over and they give him a shove, and there under his foot is a gold coin. So, you know, he spent all afternoon dreaming about how he's going to be able to buy shoes that don't have holes in them, and how he's going to be able to buy toys that he'd never seen and never had. And maybe he'll be able to get something from his parents, you know, a gold coin worth a lot of money. And now he has nothing. And all that time that he spent not being Mechalel Shabbos cost him the gold coin. He resents it. He resents it. So Moshe Shabbos, actually before that, so he usually prepared the Shalosh Shittos by the shul of the Chernobyl Rebbe. So the Chernobyl Rebbe saw that he wasn't on time, and when he came, he looked all dejected. He looked very sad. He looked depressed. So he started investigating, and he started to get worried about what had happened. He goes home on Moshe Shabbos, and his parents can't get Yitzi to smile. He's so upset, so upset. So they call up the Rebbe and they say, would the Rebbe be able to speak to Yitzi? The Rebbe said, of course, send him in. So Yitzi comes into the Rebbe's office. He sits down in a big chair opposite his big desk. And the Rebbe says, what's wrong? So Yitzi explains the whole story, the gold coin. And what did he do? What did he accomplish? Why? He's been Shomer Shabbos and he lost the coin. He lost the coin for Shomer Shabbos. So the Rebbe opens his drawer and he pulls out of his drawer a gold coin, exactly like the one that Yitzi wants. And he says, Yitzi, I want to give you this gold coin. Ah, but on condition, this is not a gift. This is a purchase. I'll give you this gold coin, but you have to agree to sell me the schar in Olam Haba for not taking that coin on Shabbos. You willing to do that, Yitzi? Yitzi says, wait. Wait
no.
a minute.
He's like, no.
wait a minute. The Rebbe is saying that he wants to buy with the gold coin the schar of Shmir Shabbos. That means the schar of Shmir Shabbos is worth a lot more than a gold coin because the Rebbe is a good businessman. Forget it. No way, Rebbe. No way. I wouldn't sell it for a million gold coins. Okay, Yitzi, you win. You win. And Yitzi, of course, leaves with a new understanding. But that's what the Yetzer Hara wants from us. The Yetzer Hara wants us to give up. The Yetzer Hara wants us to have Yeish. The Yetzer Hara wants us to resent the Torah and Mitzvahs. So if sometimes, if he can get us to do something and then make us fall on our face, he has us right where he wants us. So we have to fight. So whenever we're in a situation where it's difficult, that's a sign that we're on the right track.
Right.
So that's what the Mesilas Yesharim says, is that there's no such thing as organic development. So a sefer of Musar has to do two things for us. It has to, number one, give us the idea about where we want to head. And number two is that the tools have to be at our disposal to get there. The tools are the trickiest part for a sefer Musar, and sometimes they don't even give us the tools. Because sometimes a person has to know how to get those tools into himself in his own way. Not everybody's the same. Everybody has to know how to do it. So just like the therapist said, you got to have a keychain. You got to have something to hold. You have to have something that you can feel to remember you're here and not there. So we have to also look for tools. That's really what Musar is. Musar is about finding the tools to make ourselves suffer and struggle a little bit, to integrate the thought process into something that we feel as an automatic emotion. So the Mesilas Yesharim really is about giving us the guidelines for where we need to head, and as to a certain extent, what tools we need to get there. So the tool aspect of what he's talking about is why we would call it a sefer of Musar. And of course, he says that the value of the sefer is not going to be reading it once, because it's supposed to be a sefer of Musar. So it means we have to constantly be changing, and changing once is one level, but there's a million levels. And the closer a person gets to actually internalizing something and changing, it gets deeper and deeper and deeper until the person really changes in a complete way, in a complete direction. So that's what he says, is that you have to read the sefer again and again and again. And unfortunately, people aren't really working on it. They really do think that things happen organically. And it doesn't work like that. And he says, and what's happened in the world of his time is that you have people that have completely misunderstood even what it means to be a chassid. Now, that's a big word in Mesilas Yesharim. Chassidus, of course, is one of the chapters of the book. In Perek Yod Ches is the first time he gets to it, an explanation of the Mida of Chassidus. And what he means by Chassidus is a little bit misunderstood Bizman Hazeh because of the word Chassidim. So what it means, a Chassid, it has nothing to do with what the Mesilas Yesharim refers to as Chassidus. Because a Chusid is a culture nowadays. And a Chassid is a person that is way beyond the Torah and mitzvahs, that he's doing anything in his life that he possibly could to become closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So we can't get confused about those two things. Just because a person comes from a Hasidic background had nothing to do with him being what we call a Chassid. So even though the word has a certain connotation for us, we have to try to really ignore that and focus on what it really means. But he says there's become a false Chassidus, the way he uses it in his time, that people think that the way that you grow and become a chassid is by suffering and rolling around in the snow in the winter and maybe even physically hurting yourself. He says these are not the pathways to get where we want to go. So he says, I'm basing my sefer on one very simple pasuk in the Torah. What does he mean? And he says, let me just find it over here in this one. When the pasuk says, Ma Hashem Elokecha Shoel Me'imach, Moshe Rabbeinu tells us from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want from us? Ma Hashem Elokecha Shoel Me'imach, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu ask of you? Is in Devarim Perek Yud, Yud Beis and Yud Gimel. That's the fundamental question of Judaism, and of course, the fundamental question of life. What is this all about? Yeah, Taka, what does a Kaddish Baruch Hu want from me? And that is the question that Moshe Rabbeinu asks. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
What's the answer?
I don't know the answer.
What's the answer?
Probably I don't know.
You don't know? So it's a pasuk. And in the pasuk is not one thing. It's a bunch of different things. And the list is ki'im, just. Liyiruas Hashem Aleikecha. We'll just translate the word for now because yira can mean a number of different things. To fear or be in awe of Hashem Aleikecha. That's number one. Yira. Number two. Laleches b'chol derachav. To walk in all of his ways. Which is a very strange thing to say. What does it mean to walk in the ways of Hashem? Fearing Hashem or being awe of Hashem, at least we understand on some level what it is. What does it mean to walk in the ways of Hashem? Hashem has ways that we can walk in. What does it mean to walk and what does it mean ways of Hashem? Yeah. If you want to say, imitate the ways of Hashem, say imitate. What does it mean? Laleches, what does it even mean? That's number two. Number three, ula'ahava oisai, to love him. We know what that means, but it seems like an impossibility. To be afraid of something is one thing, but to actually love a Kaddish Baruch Hu sounds like a much more difficult thing to do. And to serve God, that sounds more like behaviors. Yira is an emotion. Ava is an emotion.
I got to listen to you finish up.
You have another 15 minutes? Because I was planning to go to level 3.
All
right. Yira is an emotion and Ava is an emotion. And laleches bechol derachav, we're not exactly sure what it means. But here, v'lavod, to serve, that's for sure behaviors. Yeah, so there's a shift here between emotions and behaviors. To serve, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem Aleikecha, v'chol levavcha, v'chol nafshecha. All of your heart and all of your soul. Okay, so we have to figure out what that means too. Lishmor es mitzvos Hashem, v'eschuk oisav, and then he writes, etc. And to guard the mitzvos of Hashem. So he writes that in this pasuk are all of the components that make a person complete in what he's doing here in life. So he spells them out, and we'll go through them, and then we'll stop with this. He says, number one, what does yira mean? What does it mean fear? Like it means we're supposed to be shaking our way for the punishment? What does it mean? He says, no. He says, that's not what it means. It means to be in awe of Hashem. Which means that we have to have a perception about how amazing Hashem is in order to feel that way. Like a person would have a certain awe when he's in the presence of a great leader in this world. Wow. He, you know, what he says changes the world. And also there's a feeling of a certain embarrassment or humility when you're around him. You know, you don't want to do anything that's going to make you look stupid in front of such a big person. You want to impress him. So every movement you make, you're conscious of. You don't want to look like a fool. That's number one. Number two, what does it mean, halicha b'drachav? So he says that includes fixing our midos. In other words, the ways in which we relate to other people, those are ways in which a Kadosh Baruch Hu relates to us. And if you look in Chumash, it says all over the place, the various ways in which a Kadosh Baruch Hu relates to the world and to Klal Yisrael. In other words, it says that Hashem has rachamim. Does Hashem really have rachamim? Hashem, Hashem, kel rachum. What's the difference between chesed and rachamim? You know? So chesed is loving kindness. It's like going above and beyond, right? Rachamim is different. Rachamim means you're walking down the street and you see an ani. He's wearing tatters. It looks like he hasn't showered in a long time. He looks very scruffy. So why do you give him money? Out of chesed? The truth of the matter is you give him money out of rachamim, out of like pity. Pity, mercy, is a different characteristic than chesed. Chesed theoretically can be altruistic. Rachamim is motivated by a feeling of pity. Does a Kadosh Baruch Hu have feelings of pity? That would mean that a Kadosh Baruch Hu has an emotion that's telling him what to do, that's motivating him. That's not possible. Kadosh Baruch Hu isn't motivated by feelings. Feelings is a human thing. So how can it say in the Torah, Kadosh Baruch Hu is rachum? Not true. So the answer is, one of the answers is, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu has ways in which he is described as behaving. Why? So that will behave that way. These are considered by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be positive traits that we are supposed to inculcate within us. So that's what it means to walk in the ways of Hashem. Hashem is described as having ways of behavior. He behaves in this way. It's not really true. Ultimately, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does what he wants for his own reasons, and there's nothing motivating him to do that because he's not compelled by anything. Certainly not emotions. So the reason why he's described this way is to teach us what are the ways we're supposed to imitate. So halicha bedrachav, walking in the ways of Hashem, includes all of the fixing of character traits that we have. And he quotes, mahu rachum afata rachum. Like he's described as being merciful, you should become merciful. That's what it means, halicha bedrachav. Ahava, that's easier to understand, harder to reach, that a person should put somehow into his heart, that requires a lot of musar, but somehow get into his heart an actual love of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Shleimus Halev, Lavodas Hashem, to serve God, Bechol Levavcha, what he refers to as a complete heart, that when a person performs mitzvahs and does avoda, which may mean passing tests and doing things that aren't necessarily a specific mitzvah, it may mean serving Hashem in whatever way we need to serve Hashem at the moment. So it should be with a motivation that's only for Hashem and not motivated by other things. So in other words, what he learns is la'avodas Hashem elokecha b'chol nafshecha, b'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshecha, is that our service of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, in whatever way it comes up, we start with a motivation of ourselves. And we should work on ultimately being with a full heart, a complete heart, meaning that it should be to do it for HaKadosh Baruch Hu and not a self-centered avoda. And then, of course, Shmiras Kol HaMitzvos is an important component, which is to keep the mitzvahs with all of the details with which makes them perfect. Because a mitzvah done in a certain way, you'll be yotze. But yotze is a b'di'evet. Yotze is not a lechachila. To be yotze. Oh, you're yotze. Is it the best way to do it? Not necessarily. So shleimus hamitzvos means to do them in the ways that are perfectly complete. So he says, that's what I'm basing my sefer on. But there's a problem, because this is not a musar. This is not musar. When Moshe Rabbeinu told us this pasuk, he didn't give us any musar. What do you mean he didn't give us any musar? He didn't tell us how to do it. He didn't tell us how to get from this pasuk to where we need to be. How do I put it into my heart? How do I do it? So we'll finish with this. He says, this was explained to us in Ebraisa, quoted in Avodah Zarah. Rav Pinchas ben Yair, Mikan Amar Rav Pinchas ben Yair, Torah mevia lidei zehirus. The tool that we need to begin the process is Torah. Torah, and he'll describe that. What type of Torah? Torah means so many things. Torah shebichzav, Torah shebal peh, Torah learning bava kama, Torah meaning agadata. There's so much Torah, so you can't just say, what does Torah mean? But there's some component of Torah that can and should, and hopefully will, bring a person to zehirus, to being careful, being wary about his way, conscious about what he's doing. Zehirus brings a person to zrizus. So zehirus itself is a tool that can lead a person to becoming more enthusiastic about the things he's doing. Zrizus, that enthusiasm itself, is a tool that can bring a person to be clean, naki from all of eros. Nikius, maybe li deprecious. This type of nikius can bring a person to become more separated from all of the gashmias of this world. Precious may be a lead to tahara. Ultimately, that can lead to a person more positively approaching a Kadosh Baruch with a positive purity. Tahara may be a lead to chasidus. Tahara can lead a person to going above and beyond in everything and just wanting to connect to Hashem and be a kiddush Hashem in this world. Chasidus may be a lead to anava. That can lead a person to become what really means to be humble, that everything I do is really for Hashem. And everything I have is really a tool to be used for Hashem. Anava may be a lead to raschait. Can lead to something which is called yirashchei, fear of losing out, fear of messing up, not fear of punishment. It's something completely different. It's fear of missing an opportunity of connecting to Hashem. It's a very high madrega. Yirashchei maybe a lead to kedusha. That can lead a person to what's called kedusha, which is from Hashem. Kedusha maybe the ruach hakodesh. Of course, ruach hakodesh only given by Hashem. Ruach hakodesh maybe the tchias amesim. If a person can be on such a level, he can even accomplish tchias amesim. And he says, with that brisa, you have the pathway of tools to get you where you need to go. She says, so that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to utilize that brisa. How he knew that this brisa is related to the pasuk of Ma Hashem Lekech Shoyel Meimach is because if this is ultimately going to lead to the perfect person, it has to include all those things, right? And how did he know this? How did he know to connect the two things? The Gemara does not say from the pasuk Ma'asha Elkech Hashem Ayvach Amar Repinchas Ben Yair Torah Mevia Lidei, etc., etc. It doesn't say that in the Gemara. So this is the Chiddush of the Ramchal. I assume that he's understanding that if this leads to, so to speak, the perfect person, then obviously it includes the pathway to do all of these things to accomplish the Yira. And the leches behadlicha bidrachav and the ava and the avoida shabalev and the shmiras kol mitzvahs. It includes all of that because it gets a person to ruach hakodesh and to do tres amesim. He is the complete person, which means obviously he's accomplished all of this through this pathway. And why did Pinchas ben Yair have to say you do this and then this and then this and then this? Because he's trying to show that at the ladder, this is how you get there. So mameila, this is the pathway in order to accomplish Ma Hashem Lekech Hashem Mimach. So he says, so that's what I'm going to do. And that's why it's a sefer of Musar, because these are the tools that we need in order to accomplish where we're headed. So that's what the sefer, he says, is all about, is about the tools that we're going to need. Now, there's a lot more than that. There's the perspectives and everything else. But for today, so that's the introduction of the Ramchal to Mesilas Yesharim. And he's going to give us perspectives and motivations and tools to be able to accomplish Mo Hashem Elkech Hashem Yimach, what does the Kadosh Baruch Hu want from us? And that's why it's such a special sefer. It's really all-encompassing, and it's really, whereas most Sfarim will try to focus on one particular midah or something like that, the Mesilas Yesharim uniquely gives us an overarching approach to everything. And everything fits in one way or another, which is why, of course, people say we can't really get past, like Zrizus Bismana said, you can't even get past the Iris. But okay, you know, we do what we can, and we see what he says, and it's can be very, very helpful. Okay. So if this is worthwhile, we will continue. Or we can always switch to other things.
Sure,
have a beautiful day.
You too.
Cultive.